world needs is a few more rednecks. So people ain't afraid to take a stand. What this world needs is a little more respect for the Lord and the law and the working man. And we could use a little peace and satisfaction. So good people up front take the lead.
Hey, pretty baby, are you ready for me? Yeah, it's a good rockin' daddy down from Tennessee. Just out off about San Antonio with the radio blasting and the bird dog on. There's a speed trap with my head down the town. No local yoga's gonna shut me down. Cause me and my boys got this rig around and we'll come a thousand miles from a guitar town.
If you're a country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on Survival Circle Network.
Nothing ever happened around my hometown. I ain't kind of just hanging around. But I heard someone call my name one day and I followed that voice down a lost highway. Everybody told me you can't get far on $37 in a Jeep guitar.
Absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio, Liberty Lounge. Every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern. Right here on Survival Circle.
Take me on, you must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me.
And it has taught me how to stand and fight for what I believe in. I guess that's just how I was raised. I find it hard to walk away. Me to wall, expecting me.
Someone ought to warn him before I knock him off his chair. Cause my long hair just can't cover up my redneck. I've won every fight I've ever fought. And I don't need some turkey telling me that I ain't country. Say,
oh, if you wanna have a go. I just wanna let you know. Oh, get off of my back and into my game.
What this world needs is a few more rednecks. So people ain't afraid to take a stand. What this world needs is a little more respect for the Lord and the law and the working man. We could use a little peace and satisfaction. Some good people up front.
You can't take me. I'm free.
Oh, yeah.
Our houses are protected by the good Lord and a gun. And you might meet them both if you show up here not welcome, son. Our necks are burnt, our roads are dirt, and our trucks ain't clean. The dogs run loose, we smoke, we chew, and fry everything out here.
There'll be a party come this November where we're gonna set things free. All good people gonna gather round, gonna show what made this country free. So the red, white, and blue will prevail when we're holding a hammer. When we're holding a hammer. When we're holding a hammer.
handle the truth.
But you can find it right here on The Shooting Bench, coming up next.
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's gonna do it? You? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall.
You need The Shooting Bench.
We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline.
And I am sick of the lies and the deceit and the intrusions on my privacy and the invasion of my home. And we do not intend to take this lying down.
I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way.
And now, if you think you're ready, The Shooting Bench. All right, here we are. Welcome to The Shooting Bench. It is the 10th of April, and it's Monday. And unfortunately, there's going to be no Amy tonight. Amy is not under the weather, but she's pooped. She's had a long, hard day, starting early this morning, and she just ain't got it in her to do a radio show tonight. So I'm going to have to kind of muddle my way through it here and take up some slack for her, and we'll see how all that works out. Hope everybody had a good weekend. We had a, what did we do this weekend? Kelly, you remember? Did we do anything? We worked. Oh, yeah. Had a wedding reception out there, due west here a little ways. A guy that, guy and the gal recently got married, and it was pretty neat. It was in a big, fairly open-air barn, and the barn is fixed up inside so that it's really nice inside, but it's obviously a barn. You don't just don't look like a barn on the outside and look like the Taj Mahal on the inside. It's, it looks pretty run down and pretty junky and barny on the outside, but when you get inside, it just looks like a barn that's been cleaned up and stuff hung on the walls and tables put up there. It's pretty neat. We'll have to check it out and see if we can do some classes or something out there at some point. Anyway, let me get over here on the chat room and see what's going on. Let's see who all we got. Look at the numbers in that chat room. That is unbelievable. And not that it's a lot. It's not a lot. That's okay. We got Mitty and Mountain Shooter, Pumpkin Cat, Rolex, Yakima Glock, and Anonymous popped in there. And I'm sure there'll be some more rolling in here in a little bit. Anyway, so a lot of stuff went on this weekend. A lot of stuff went on today. There's shootings and stabbings and one thing another going across the country. One of them that was kind of interesting here, it happened, 3 or 4 days ago in Tulsa, was a shooting at a gun show. One of only two or three that I've heard of. I've heard of two for sure. And I'm not sure. I just got this a little while ago, so I'm just going to read it with you. I can't. I saw a part of it. It did say that no criminal charges would be filed against the shooter. The man that was shot was a former, Tulsa County Sheriff's Office sergeant. And he told investigators that he did not want charges to be filed. Bless his heart. And he said that the shooter, his name was Brian Pounds. He's a Tulsa County Assessor's Office employee, former candidate for Tulsa County Commissioner, served as a reserve deputy under the former sheriff there, and said they were working security at the gun show over the weekend. The show bills itself as the world's largest gun show. stresses that loaded firearms are not allowed inside the expo area where the show is held. You remember the Tulsa Gun Show here, what, three years ago? It was where someone sent me a picture of a sign that was very much almost identical to my sign that said, if you voted for Barack Obama, you can't buy a gun here because you're too stupid to own a firearm or something like that. It was really similar to mine. And somebody sent me a picture of that here a couple of years ago. And anyway, the... looks like the paper there acquired surveillance footage of the shooting on Thursday, which shows the guy taking the gun out of a bag, handle it for a few seconds before pointing in the direction of Dean and Treadwell before pulling the trigger. Yeah, I watched the video of this, and the guy pulled it out, and he had police on the back of his shirt. Now, it said he was a former police officer, a former sheriff's deputy. Maybe that's why he's former and no longer. I don't know. But he messed around with the gun. It kind of looked like a Ruger Mark II or something similar to that. And I couldn't believe what he did. He pulled it out of the bag, turned to his right, which was facing into the gun show, and there were guys sitting at tables there taking money and stuff, and pointed it basically at him. I mean, there was a little room between the wall and their back. They were sitting with their backs to the wall, chairs scooted forward under the table. So there's two or three feet between them and the wall, and he was standing up, so he was aiming over their heads a little bit. But there had to have been somebody downrange there that... wasn't sitting down or stood up about the time he pulled the trigger or something. But you see a little flash out of the muzzle there, and the guy seated at the table immediately jumps up and grabs his hand, and he told the paper there a few days ago that the bullet struck him, the Treadwell, the guy that got shot, struck him in the middle finger, which is where it still is. Said the bullet ricocheted off the wall before it hit him. The guy then put the handgun on the table and reaches for his walkie-talkie before anybody else got there. And the guy was taken to the hospital. Amy just said, do you ask the obvious question? Why was he pointing a gun at people? And if it ricocheted off and hit that guy, he couldn't have been pointing it very far away from him. So what all did he do wrong? You know, he didn't check the chamber, and he pulled the trigger when he probably didn't need to. He aimed it across the tables towards people. I mean, just everything. And he's wearing a shirt that says police on the back of it. Imagine my surprise. They said the guy that pulled the trigger, guy that got shot, no, the guy that pulled the trigger could not be reached for comment on Thursday, and the guy who runs the gun show did not respond, I can't imagine. Here's another one, let's see, security guard accident shot, the same one. So, you know, and that's not the best story. Let me show you, while we're talking about guns and accidents, let me tell you about another one here. Let's see. Give me just a second here. Here it is, right here. All right. Stand by just 1 second. Hang on a minute. Okay, get this one. Let me check and see. Make sure we have everybody's full attention here. This one, the cop didn't surprise me any. I mean, this happens with monotonous regularity across the country. Something similar to that. Shooting each other, shooting themselves, accidentally shooting people they were pointing at but shouldn't have, you know, whatever. But this one here is probably a first. It's a first that I've ever heard of.
This was an actual employee of the NRA, NRA certified instructor, inside the NRA headquarters and range in Fairfax County, Virginia. So he's an employee of the NRA inside the range, teaching a class. He's an instructor, or says he is. Somebody thinks he is. And said the gun accidentally fired when he holstered it. Well, what do you think caused that? Good night, Pumpkin Cat. You don't have to leave just because I came in. Said he suffered lower body wounds, so obviously he was shot in the leg or something. He didn't hurt any. Said it was minor. But it was still during a class. It was in a building. Of course, they have a range there in the museum. I've been to the... Actually, the one I went to was in was when they were still in D.C. It wasn't in Virginia. But they've moved into... moved out of occupied territory right now, and they're back in the United States. But, so what caused that? Had his finger on the trigger? Had a strap from the holster, glove, shirt tail, zipper, drawstring? Could have been any number of things. And a pretty short story because it just happened. Let's see. It's dated today. So it said that police reportedly worked with local attorney's office and indicated that they don't expect charges to be filed. And they asked the NRA for comment, but did not receive an immediate response. So, imagine my surprise. They're going to probably sit down and tailor up a real nice statement there of some kind, saying how this happened. But to my knowledge, that's the first time an NRA instructor shot himself at the NRA museum. NRA range, headquarters. It's not the first time an NRA instructor has shot himself. There's been more than one of those. But this one was a little different because it was actually in their headquarters. So, you know, I did complacency. Anybody can get complacent. I find it pretty odd that this would happen, especially there. I mean, it doesn't surprise me as much because if he's an employee, I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like cops. I guess we hold them to a higher standard. It's one thing to have went and taken an 8-hour class somewhere and get your little paper that says you're an instructor and then have an accident out on a range somewhere. That happens from time to time. But working at the headquarters for the very people that certify thousands and thousands and thousands of instructors and do something like that, it would appear to me that if someone were in that position doing that type of, conducting that type of activity, that they would be pretty squared away. I mean, that they, you know, they've been checked out and rechecked out and have lots of, it don't matter how tuned up you are, how tuned up you think you are, how much training you've had, there's certain things that you just don't ever take for granted. And there's some things you just don't ever do. You should get in the hat. I can't even carry an electric drill with my finger on the trigger. I just can't. I can't make myself do it. Pick up a heat gun, a spray bottle, a drill, a screw gun, anything with some type of a trigger like that. I can't put my finger on the trigger unless I'm fixing to spray some water out of it. Or a soldering iron or something like that. So it puzzles me how these people that are supposed to be you know, a cut above. You know, they're supposed to be teaching classes, and they're trying to teach people not to do things like that, and then they do it. And I'd just guessing, I don't know what class he was teaching or who was present there, but I'm sure it was not an advanced class considering where it was at and everything. It was probably for beginners, but I don't know that. I'm speculating. Surely a guess here. So what now of the couple of soccer moms on the firing line there that were scared when they got there? And this guy who they are entrusting literally their lives to while they're learning how to shoot, learning how to be safe, and the very guy that's teaching you this shoots himself. I don't know, it all just doesn't add up. Oh, well, anyway. While we're on gun stuff, you know, while we're talking about safety and whatnot, Chicago, again, Cook County, there was a Cook County judge, actually, that was one of seven shooting victims in Chicago this weekend. Story just came out today. Seven people, including a Cook County judge, were shot and killed between Friday afternoon and Monday morning. Now, seven's a little on the light side, for not being a holiday weekend or anything. But the weekend's most recent fatal shooting occurred Monday morning in the South Side West Chesterfield neighborhood. Authorities responded to the shooting and found a 66-year-old man and a 51-year-old woman both suffering from gunshot wounds. They've confirmed the man to be Cook County Judge Raymond Miles, who was shot multiple times and later pronounced dead at the local hospital. The woman was shot in the leg, transported to hospital in serious condition. Unbelievable. Kind of a long story. That's not that long. So far, wow. You have got to be kidding me. Amy, listen to this. So far in 2017, this is April, fourth month's not even over yet. So far in 2017, 824 people have been shot and 161 killed in Chicago, according to the Chicago Tribune. Just Chicago? It's probably Cook County, but Chicago covers most of Cook County. So. No. Amy said, that's just a city. That's not even the whole state. 824 shot, 161 killed. I lost the story. Anyway, that was the biggest part of it anyway. School shooting today, I guess some of you have heard about that. I don't know what there's an update on that, but there was two. There was a couple of students hit. Two adults dead in the classroom, two students in critical condition after a suspected murder-suicide. This is in San Bernardino, California. Apparently, the shooters walked onto the elementary school campus and went to blazing away here. But it appears that it was started out to begin with to be a murder-suicide, is what they're guessing. He did kill himself. They just don't know that's what it intended to be, what it started out to be. But they, 10:30 this morning, report of an active shooter just before, and then there was, what else did I see just a little bit ago, before the show started. Anyway, all kinds of stuff going on this weekend. Interesting stuff. I've got a lot more things to share with you. Now, I've got my crystal ball runneth over tonight, so I'm going to take a little break here and get my poop in a group, and we'll be back here in just a minute. Stand by.
I'll be back.
But we have to stop looking for salvation in this system. The system is not going to fix itself. If the system is restored, it will be restored with the hammer of patriotism smacking this system out between the anvil of freedom and teaching this system that there is a shape we wanted to maintain, and that we have the forge of rage, and we will put that system in that forge of rage, and we will use that hammer of liberty and pound it against the anvil of freedom until it returns to the shape we want it to be in.
Now Elmer Jones arose at dawn and put his hunting breeches on, then looked up at his shotgun on the wall. He made his mind up then and there to bag himself at shooting. He had plenty on the ball. He milked the cow and fed the hog, then kissed his wife, called the dog, picked up his gun and started on his quest. He crossed the creek and hit the trees, threw back his head and sniffed the breeze, let out a yell and pounded on his chest.
Here comes Elmer, Elmer's got his gun. Here comes Elmer, run, bear, run.
He hunted all the morning through, but not a bear came into view, while Elmer's thoughts were on the kitchen range. For he was sick as he could be of lamb and chicken fricassee, and craved a mess of bear meat for a change. Poor Elmer's mind was in a fog. He paused and sat down on a log, get his tackle lid back in the groove. He heard a noise, and standing there before him was a grizzly bear, and figured it was time he made his move.
Here comes Elmer, Elmer's got his gun. Here comes Elmer, run, bear, run.
Grabbed his gun and turned around, but Mr. Bear just stood his ground, and Elmer said, it's either me or thou. The gun refused to go, and so he knew that somebody had to go, and said, farewell, I'm leaving as of now. Elmer's shoulders sprouted wings, his feet developed inner springs. To linger longer, he was disinclined. He ran so fast through muck and mire, his ankles set his socks afire, and still that bear kept coming on behind.
Here comes Elmer, Elmer's got his gun. Elmer, run, bear, run.
A deer with antler 8 feet wide got in the way of Elmer's stride as both of them went heading for the brush. Elmer said, now listen, son, if that's the fastest you can run, move over, because I'm really in a rush. The bear was gaining inch by inch and finally reached out for the clinch as Elmer saw the fence around his place. He leaped the fence and landed hard, jumped 60 feet across the yard and slammed the kitchen door in Bruin's face.
Here comes Elmer, Elmer's got his gun. Here comes Elmer, run, bear, run.
The bear was trying to get inside while Elmer sought a place to hide, and Mrs. Jones began to pull her hair. She said, this fuss has got to stop. Why don't you let that matter drop? And Elmer said, honey, you go tell that to the bear. And Elmer's wife said, listen, goon, how come you think you're Daniel Boone, whose appetite on bear meat used to thrive? He said, I'm sure that you're aware that Daniel always killed his bear, but honey, I done brought this baby home alive.
Here comes Elmer. Elmer's got his gun. Here comes Elmer. Run, bear, run.
Nobody will stand with you if you don't stand. God can't stand with you if you don't stand. And don't stand and then sit down. It's worse. It sets a precedent. You know, count the cost. The cost may be dear. It may be everything. It may be your life. Okay? But unless we're willing to value freedom more than our lives, do we really deserve freedom? God can't stand with a man until the man stands. And so God is waiting for us to stand. And at that moment that when he stands, God could stand with him. And then the other thing is that people could stand with him. You know, nobody can stand with you until you stand.
It took all the footage off my TV. Said it's too disturbing for you and me. It'll just breed anger. That's what the experts say. If it was up to me, I'd show it every day. Some say this country's just out looking for a fight. After 9/11, man, I'd have to say that's right.
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
Okay, I got some homework for you. I want you to write this down and check it out. This bill that's been introduced in Texas is the ultimate, absolutely the single most retarded bill by the single most retarded person that ever walked the earth. It's a real deal. I'm not even going to tell you what it's about because there's kids listening. I can't even, in my wildest nightmares, believe that this was serious, but it's true. I saw it first on Cron. This is what they call the Houston Chronicle. I looked it up on the Texas State Legislature site. And you're going to have to go look it up for yourself because I'm not even going to tell you any more about it than what I've just told you. It is, you probably have to put in Texas State Bill, it's House Bill, HB 4620. You'll probably have to specify Texas because that's, there's more House bills with the same number all around the country. Check it out. Read the story that goes with it. Let's see, I can probably type that in for you. Hang on just a second here. I got it on my phone, so I can't cut and paste it. you know what? I'm not even going to type it in on there. You're going to have to look it up yourself. Go to M, as in Mike, .cron, C-H-R-O-N, .com/news/Houston and find it from there. You will recognize the story when you see it. I don't have to tell you what it's about. I'll know when you find it. It's unbelievable. Totally, absolutely unbelievable. Completely. Boy, we are in sad need of a reset here. Today, no, it wasn't today. I think the story came out today. It may have been today. It's a brand new story anyway. A United Airlines flight, if you want to look up the whole story, you can look up United Airlines Flight 3411-3411 from Louisville to Chicago, Louisville, Kentucky to Chicago, Illinois. They overbooked the flight. Now keep up with me here. Pay attention to what's going on. They overbooked the flight, and they said that there was some, that they needed some seats for some employees so that other flights wouldn't be late or something like that. So they asked for volunteers. The plane was over. Now, everybody had a seat. They didn't have people standing in line waiting to get on that couldn't. Everybody was sitting down. Seats were full. But everybody had one. And they said, you know, we need to get rid of some of y'all. We need four of you to leave. Do we have any volunteers? They offered them $400, night in a motel, and a free flight on another, you know, not paying any additional money on the next flight. Nobody took them up on it. Everybody wanted to get home or get wherever it was that they were going. They upped it to $800. Please, somebody get off this plane. We're giving you $800, free motel room, and flight on the next plane. Nobody took them up on it. Nope. We got things to do, places to go, and people to see, and staying here another night ain't it. So they said, okay, we're going to let the computer pick. We're going to let the computer pick volunteers. So understand what I'm saying. When the computer brings your name up, you have just volunteered. You are now a volunteer on account of the computer said so. Are you with me so far? Okay. So they brought up a man and his wife, and they said, well, okay, I'll take my $800 and we'll just stay another night. And that's not what we wanted to do, but we will. So the next new names that come up was a doctor and his wife. And the doctor said, no, hell no. He said, I've got patients waiting. I've got things going on, people, and I can't stay here another day. I've got to go. So the airline people called law enforcement. They beat this guy unconscious, put him in handcuffs, I think they tased him also, I don't remember. But anyway, they pulled him off the plane. He got away from him, run back onto the plane, said, no, I ain't going anywhere. They beat this guy pretty bad. Covered up with blood, disoriented, he told passengers he needed to go home. And man, he was scared to death. He said he was grabbing a dividing curtain and repeating, they'll kill me, blood pouring from his mouth. Oh, by the way, isn't it United that has the slogan to fly the friendly skies? Well, maybe not so much, but United Airlines released a press statement that says flight 3411 from Chicago to Louisville was overbooked. And after our team looked for volunteers, one customer refused to leave the aircraft voluntarily, and law enforcement was asked to come to the gate. We apologize for the overbooked situation. It says the Chicago Police Department Office of Communications has released a statement saying that the 69-year-old man fell and hit his head on the armrest. Chicago police statement confirms officers forcibly removed a passenger who refused to leave an oversold flight, injuring his head. Now, what I've heard since then, and this is not the updated story here, I've heard that at least one of those officers has been suspended or put on unpaid leave or whatever it was. So he followed up with a second statement on Twitter apologizing to the four customers who were removed. United said, this is an upsetting event to all of us here at United. I apologize having to reaccommodate these customers. Our team, stop, why did you do that? I'm reading. Our team is moving with a sense of urgency to work with the authorities and conduct our own detailed review of what happened. We're also reaching out to this passenger to talk directly to him and further address and resolve this situation. Folks, I want to tell you, if I was that doctor, I would soon be the proud owner of a popular airline company. I can't even believe that this happened. Now, of course, there's people on there that say that, it's a private company and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that could be. But when you buy that plane ticket, you have a contract. Do you not? When you buy that plane ticket, you agree, you and them agree, you got things that you sign, things that you read over, website, legal documents, you got all this stuff here. It is a contract. Okay. I have a contract here for my ass in that seat, and I'm going to Chicago or Louisville or wherever there's going. And, I'm sorry. That's right, Yakima Glock. They reaccommodated him, you know, until he lost consciousness. That's right. It's like that meme I made for Lavoie right there. It said, what was it? It said, Oregon State Police protecting and serving you to death. Yeah. Something similar to that. So, anyway, United will not be on my list of airlines to use here from now on. Turn this noise off here. Okay. Okay. Did anybody look that bill up yet? That Texas bill? Not Texas bill. That's an old story. No. Texas bill. What was it? I told you what it was. 4620. 4620. Look it up. You will not believe what you're going to read. Mountain Shooter? I don't even think California has ever topped this one. Texas right now, in my eyes, holds the record for the single most retarded bill ever put in front of legislature. Yep, no doubt about it. I usually don't have trouble talking about stuff, but this one I am just not talking about in mixed company. Okay. There is, let me get down here and see, there's a great increase here, a great deal for concealed carry, constitutional carry. Have you guys paid attention to that? Yeah, Yakima Glock looked it up. Unbelievable. I mean, he knows what it's about. Can you guys even believe in your wildest dreams, nightmares, that they would have a bill that would regulate? Oh, by the way, I'm fixing to do the deed here, so let me call and make arrangements. I am not getting it. All right. It appears here that North Dakota is about to become the 14th state that allows carrying without a permit. Now there is 14. Let's see. I'll have to figure that out. Let's see. We have Alaska, Idaho, Wyoming, kind of in Montana and only in the city limits, Arizona, Mississippi, Arkansas, Missouri, Kansas, North Dakota now, West Virginia, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine are all now constitutional carry states. On Friday, let's see, this was a couple of weeks ago, less than 2 weeks ago, that North Dakota's governor signed legislation making their state the 14th that allows carrying concealed handgun, carrying without a concealed handgun permit. So, we've got another related story here. Let me go find that here. It's back on the other end of my crystal ball. This was supposed to be not gun night, but we got a lot of gun stuff we got to cover here. There it is right there. National Association for Gun Rights is saying that constitutional carry is on the move. The first few months of 2017 brought heated battles to state capitals around the country. And it shows now, let me see if this one coincides with the other one. Let's see. One, two, no, there are two states behind on this one. It says New Hampshire and North Dakota have already passed constitutional carry, becoming the 11th and 12th states. Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm looking at this backwards. Yeah, there, it's right. Idaho, Wyoming, Arizona, North Dakota, Kansas, Missouri. They do not have Arkansas on here. And anyway, they're just asking, they're trying to get constitutional carry in every state. So if you're interested in trying to help this out, you can go to the National Association for Gun Rights webpage. It's NAGR.org, November Alpha Golf Romeo.org, Oscar Romeo Golf. And there's a deal that you can sign on there, a petition. And they've got it all written out and everything for you. All you got on there is put your name, email, and zip code, and you're part of the movement. So. All right. I wish I hadn't done that. Stand by just a minute. I got to fix one. I just screwed it up. Hang on. It's okay. It's all fixed. Let me this should be interesting to you. We're not going to have anything left for Wednesday night, but I got to catch up on some of this stuff. If you talk to someone, even someone that's fairly knowledgeable about ballistics and large caliber wounds and whatnot, there seems to be a pretty much universal opinion here that if you get shot with a shotgun anywhere in the center mass, you're going to die. Well, the chances are pretty good you will, especially if you're using buckshot or something. However, if you're using slugs, slugs have a tremendous amount of energy, especially out of a 12-gauge. Whole bunch of energy. And they make a 3/4 inch diameter hole, providing it doesn't expand or you know, and hit a bone or something and have a bigger coming out hole. But the going in hole is about 3/4 inch. And the chances are pretty good, if you get shot with a shotgun slug, that you're probably going to die. However, and I have talked about this to lots of people in lots of classes over the last quite a few years. People will say the same thing about a 50 caliber machine gun. Or 50 caliber rifle. If you're using standard military ammunition, full metal jacket ammunition, or armor piercing or something like that, it makes a half inch hole through you. It's a lot of energy and everything, but you just don't offer much resistance for it. It pretty much goes on through unnoticed, and you just go on and it goes on downrange and does stuff, you know, a mile and a half away. And providing it doesn't hit anything structural, spine, pelvis, something like that, femur, or any heavy bones, you know, shoulder, you know, collarbone, stuff like that. Chances are pretty good it's going to go in and out and not a whole lot of damage done. And I've talked to guys, you know, that were in Vietnam and that would shot these little Oriental guys that, you know, 4'10" and 120 pounds, and they said that they would shoot them, and they just were so determined that they just continue to walk into it until they usually die from one of two things. Hydraulic failure, which would be blood loss, structural, you know, what am I looking for? Central nervous system, somewhere in the spine, the brain, something like that. But some of them have absorbed quite a few shots before this happened. So just because you've been shot with, you know, and 2 ounces of lead or whatever it is, in the case of a shotgun slug, an ounce, ounce and an eighth, ounce and a quarter, whatever it may be, 3/4 of an ounce if it's a 20 gauge, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to die. This guy here, this is an official, NCBI, U.S. National Library of Medicine, National Institutes of Health. And they have a deal here from 2010. It talks first about shotguns being capable of firing single projectiles. Shotgun slug injuries are rare, severe, and fully comparable to those inflicted by high-velocity projectiles. A case of gunshot suicide of a 59-year-old man with a shotgun loaded with slugs is presented. The first two shots, are you with me here? The first two shots, these are shotgun slugs, into the heart region, but did not hit vital organs of the victim's thorax and did not cause immediate incapacitation. Two shotgun slugs. The man, get this, the man was able to reload and refire. Oh, I've just shot myself in the chest with a 12-gauge slug and it didn't work. Let me reload and try that one more time. Well, damn it. It didn't work this time either. Let me reload this booger one more time. Let's try it again. The third shot was fired into the region of the right temple. The last shot caused severe cerebrocranial gunshot injury and was fatal. So there you have it. So just because you're going to be shot with a shotgun slug doesn't necessarily mean you can't go to the party tomorrow. Unbelievable. So let's let me clean up some of my clutter here from my crystal ball, and I'll be back here in a few minutes, and we'll go on with some more of this. Hang on just a second, because I was absolutely not prepared here. Let's see. Stay with me here just a minute. We'll see if we can get Amy squared away next Monday, and get her on. This was a long, hard day for her, so. Okay. Matter of fact, she's headed in there to go to bed right now. R-A-T, right now. I'll be darned. Here I am trying to do wonderful things and it's not working. All right, let's start from here and then we'll...
I'll be back.
That's what I like to see, bullseyes, every time. And you can do the same thing with Beyer Barrels. As long as you do your part, the custom barrels that you get from Beyer Barrels will deliver award-winning accuracy shot after shot. Beyer Barrel specializes in standard and 1-in-9-inch twist match-grade 22 long rifle barrels for the Ruger 10/22 and AR-15. If you want to win, visit their site at BeyerBarrels.com. That's BeyerBarrels.com. Or you can call Clint at 360-374-9476 and tell him you heard it on the Shooting Fence, would you? Let him know that his advertising money is doing him some good.
Are you going to agree? Our freedoms are waning and we'll lose our liberty. Slipping one by one until there's nothing left to see. Are you willing to stand with me? Are you just going to let it be? The ranchers are first, but brother, next it may be me. We all stand together or we'll hang separately. Are you going to the tree? Are you willing to be free? It won't get any easier to regain lost liberty. Strange things are happening in this land that once was free. So brother, I ask you, are you going to stand by me?
Budapest is the capital of what European country? Budapest is the capital of what European country Nathan has already locked in?
This might be a stupid question.
I'm guessing it's probably
okay.
Going to be.
Like, I thought Europe was a country. Let's see. Budapest? I never even heard of that.
All right, here's your options. I mean, you could drop out with $10,000.
Like,
you got...
I know they speak French there, don't they? Like, I want to say, is France a country? I don't know what I'm doing.
You know what? Let's talk about your options.
Okay.
Kel.
Yes.
Focus.
I am. Like, I'm listening to what you're saying, but I only hear what I want to.
That's just called being a woman. If you had had to guess, do you have a guess?
I don't think France is a country, but I would have said that. I don't know. I'm just going to say France. I don't know.
Okay. France is a country. I will tell you that. If you had said France, you would have gone home with nothing. That's not the right answer. The right answer... is hungry.
Is what?
Hungry.
Hungry?
Like I'm hungry.
That's a country? I've heard of Turkey, but hungry, never heard of it.
But the answer is hungry, so...
Allahu Akbar, Allah.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
We're back. Let's see if we can muddle through one more hour here one way or another. You know, something I've noticed here is that the 32K server does not seem to be working tonight. Everything's working on my end, as far as I know, according to the numbers here. But the 32 is not on. So I guess when you go into survivalcircle.com, you automatically start listening to the 64 anyway. But that may attribute to the low numbers we have in the chat room tonight. But all right, let's see what we got going on here. Let me check the Rolex just put something in there. Two swimmers reported bitten by sharks over the weekend. One was airlifted to Orlando Hospital. 21-year-old woman was bitten on the hand. Declined medical care. Oh boy, if I get bit by a shark, I'm probably going to at least get Band-Aid for it. Second case, 10-year-old girl suffered a 6-inch bite in the leg as she swam. You know, these Yakima Glock says he's listening on 32. I don't know what's going on. Well, it's not not showing to be broadcasting on 32. Huh. Oh, well, who cares? I guess if it's working, it's working. All right. Oh, by the way, I'm going to tell everybody, I think I told you Friday, that survival tabs have been ordered. They're en route. If you ordered, they will be coming to your door. And I would suspect they have been shipped. It's already, they're already on the way. And should be, I'm going to guess, probably Wednesday or Thursday they ought to start showing up. Some of these orders are pretty big, so obviously they're all going UPS ground. So. All right, remember when we talked about, remember who Will Hayden is? Will Hayden was the guy on the reality TV show Sons of Guns. Remember Will Hayden? He was the top dog there, and there was a gun company. What was the name of that? Red something? Red Jacket Firearms was owned by Hayden, and they have announced that they're way back when this happened in 2014. They announced that they separate themselves from him. Anyway, he was accused of rape and to a couple of girls. And anyway, they have he's been found guilty, and he's going to be gone for a while. So. We won't be looking for that show to come back on anytime soon. And I figured that this would probably be the case. But this guy was kind of a jerk on the TV show, and apparently he was in real life, too. So. Okay. Well, everybody on the chat room saying that 32 is working. So, well, according to this... It's not. As long as y'all tell me it is, that's okay. We'll go with what you say. I was looking at a deal here. Let me see. Before I get started in this one, this next one's going to be kind of long, so let me make sure that we got the other ones covered that I wanted to cover here. Still leaving some gun stuff for tomorrow night. Did you hear that the House has voted to allow nonviolent ex-felons to get their gun rights restored? So if you robbed a bank and didn't use a gun or whatever, and it was nonviolent and a felony, that they have, there's a good possibility that this may result in you getting your, if you happen to be one of these unfortunate individuals, you might get your gun rights back. Said this was a significant victory for Second Amendment rights. The House this week voted to let nonviolent felons win their gun rights back, citing a grandfather who, as a college student, became a felon for writing a bad rent check. Said the nonviolent ex-felons would be able to apply to restore their gun rights. So it doesn't, it's not going to be a sweeping blanket deal for everybody. It doesn't sound like you're going to have to apply for it. But they're saying that their one mistake shouldn't define your future. So we'll see what happens with that. And sounds like a good deal to me. As far as I'm concerned, if you have served your time and paid your price, then you ought to get your rights back. Care what you did. If it's bad enough that you don't get your rights back, then you ought to stay in jail. That's the way I see it. That's what's wrong with this whole country, though, is people don't do it the way I see it. That's the problem. But anyway. Oh, you hear Starbucks now is crying the blues. They now hollering, squalling, and bawling, talking to the conservatives there, saying, please come back. We didn't really mean they've, after Howard Schultz has stepped down as the CEO, it says that it definitely has hurt sales. There's been enough people that have boycotted Starbucks that it has made a difference. So now Schultz is on his way out the door, and the company wants conservatives to come back. Yeah, we'll see how that works out for him. I imagine there's a whole bunch of them that probably not looking to do that. Starbucks on Wednesday announced a huge expansion of their veteran hiring program. Listen to that, which Fortune magazine reported as an attempt to make things right with conservatives. Remember, they're the ones that said that they were going to, over the next 5 years or whatever, they were going to hire 10,000 immigrants, legal or illegal, doesn't matter. And Black Rifle Coffee, who, if you're a coffee drinker, then that's who you ought to be using, is Black Rifle Coffee. During the same time period, they said they were going to hire 5,000 or 10,000 veterans over this next whatever period or five-year period. So now Starbucks saying they are really revamping their veteran program here. We didn't really mean that. That was Howard's deal there. That was Mr. Schultz's idea. We didn't really want that to start with. You know, that's not us. Said financial analysts have put at least partial blame for Starbucks' lackluster sales growth on Schultz's outspoken liberal activism, which dates back to the early days of the presidential primary. Donald Trump called for the first boycott at a campaign rally in November of 2015, following the controversy surrounding the coffee maker's non-denominational holiday cups. We talked about those on the show here. Anyway, we'll see what happens. All right, well, let's get started on this other deal here. Yakima Glock has kept up with that. He says that the new company that the non-pedophile guys at Red Jacket, I believe, is called Hightower Armory. Oh, good. I'm glad that they, hope they get their feet under them and recover from that and get back on the road there. All right. I took extreme exception here to a story that I found yesterday. And now if I can just find it today, that would be awesome. It's here somewhere in all of this. What the heck? I guess I should have found it before I started talking, but there it is right there. I got it. See, I found it. Quit looking. And I'm going to write to these people or email them or something, because I cannot even begin to tell you how much I disagree with this story. The title of this story is Three Calibers You Should Not Use When Hunting These Animals. I don't like the title right off the bat, because if you're a good shot and you're a sportsman and you're ethical, you can use any caliber to hunt anything that you think will take it down. Of course, there are limits no matter what. You're not going to be very successful hunting elephants with a .22. It's just not going to work. Even if you shoot them in the eye, it's not going to work. So there are mechanical, physical limits. But, you know, there has been a great many elephants killed with this standard old 7mm Mauser. You know, most people take the 460 Weatherbys and the 577 Nitro Express and all this kind of stuff out there. But there has been a lot of them killed with plain old 7mm. You just got hit in the right place. And there's been at least three, I think it was three, it might have been five, I don't remember, killed with a 44 Magnum. These were special hand-turned, hand-machined tungsten cord bullets that achieved something like 22 inches of penetration in the skull, and one shot, and it was lights out. They did fine. So I am very much opposed to somebody telling me in the first place that I should not use a certain caliber to hunt with. Well, it matters. The caliber is not nearly as important as the person behind it, behind the gun. They are the ones that decide if the shot should be taken. And whether, you know, there's, then I don't necessarily approve of using a 243 for elk. Will a 243 kill elk? Oh, yes, ma'am, I hope to tell you it will. There's a certain number of people in Wyoming that do this all the time. I've told you that before, that hunt elk with monotonous regularity with 243s. I know a guy in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, that killed moose with a 30-30. I know a guy in Cody, no, what the hell was that? St. Mary's, Idaho, routinely hunts bear with a 223. I know a guy in Arizona killed a bear with a 22 Magnum. You know, it's all a matter of placing your shot properly. And if you're not ethical and sportsman enough to make it clean and quick, then it doesn't matter. You know, by the same token, I have seen 90-pound white-tailed deer run away from bad hits with a 7mm Magnum. You know, that thing, that works both ways. We just talked about a guy that absorbed two shots in the thoracic cavity from 12-gauge slugs. So I as soon as I read the title of this, I didn't like this guy right off the bat. Now let's talk about those caliber. I wish Doc was in here with us because he'd like to hear this. The guy is, I think, just trying to fill a niche here. He's not sure what he's supposed to be doing. He says there's been volumes written about what calibers are appropriate. He said, but there's not enough people, not anybody has really put any time into what's not appropriate, what you should not be using. So he gets in here, and his very first thing on the list was 223 Remington. All right, I'm going to tell you that I probably not the first one on the bandwagon for hunting something the size of mule deer with a 223. However, my uncle killed hundreds of mule deer with a 222. I've killed, I don't know, two or three with a 223. It's a matter of making your shot in the proper place, using the proper construction of bullet. You don't use full metal jackets and shoot them in the belly. You're going to wind up with a wounded deer, and you're probably not ever going to find him. He's going to die a terrible death, and you're going to be an asshole for the rest of your life. So he says the great varmint round. He said over the, now this is what I don't understand. This guy is not a shooter. He has no business writing this story. He said over the last decade, it's been finding its way into the deer woods more and more with poor results. That is a damn lie. Number one, it hasn't been finding its way in over the last decade. It's been in the woods, in the deer woods since 1960. You know, as soon as it made it into civilian hands, it started killing deer. And with pretty damn good results. And his second part of that sentence says, more and more with poor results. You know, there's been deer lost to 30-30s and 30-06 and 308s and 270s and 7mm and 243s and 257 Roberts and 260 Remingtons and on and on. Just because, yeah, I know there's been some loss for the 223. But this guy is saying that, you know, Yakima Glock, you say you know a guy killed a mouse with a 41 Magnum? I shot a squirrel one time with a 44. That was an interesting sight. He was in a tree up above me about 20 feet. It rained squirrel for 10 minutes after that was over. Anyway, he says, I've seen this tragically firsthand. The first time I saw a 223 used for hunting whitetail was about 8 years ago, when a hunter with many years' experience hit a small four-point buck in the vitals with a 55-grain soft-point bullet. The deer took off for parts unknown, and that is the last time it was seen. There's not a lot of whitetails in this country that exceed 150 pounds live weight. There are some. There's some big ones. You get up farther up north. But when people talk about whitetails, more often than not, they're talking about Georgia and Texas, Alabama, Florida, Arkansas or whatever, Missouri. Missouri's got some decent size deer up there. But the average one, I have to tell you, I killed one in Idaho one time that was... I think, if I remember right, dressed out, hanging on the scales, was 180 pounds. He was a good-sized deer. Not as big as some of the mule deer I've killed, but he was a good-sized deer. Killed that one with 44. So even if we're talking about the bigger whitetails, so this guy sees one deer. He says he shot in the vitals with a 55-grain soft-point bullet. Well, they may have shot at the vitals, but he was not hit in the vitals. Because that 50, I've got a picture. I'll scan that picture one of these days of a whitetail that I killed with the 223. And you would not, in your wildest fantasies, believe the degree of damage that this caused. It was horrible. It was a 52. No, it was a. I don't remember what the. It was a hollow point anyway, but it was absolutely astonishing the amount of damage that it did. It looked like you'd put a grenade in there and pulled the pin and run off. It was terrible, and that deer didn't take a step. Of all the deer, I killed a lot of whitetail with 223. I've killed only two or three mule deer, but I've killed quite a few whitetail. I'd probably, 15 or 20 of them with a 223. And I don't think any of them took more than two or three steps. I mean, they did well. Hang on one second here. Be right back. Easily. So I don't believe that guy lost all credibility with me in his first paragraph here. He said, the hunter was sure he'd hit the deer as it reacted like it had been struck. So they don't even know for sure that they hit it. Because I'll guarantee you, if it was a whitetail and you hit it in the vitals with a 55-grain 223, you're going to find it. He said he was sure he hit it because it reacted like it had been struck. Well, it might have hit a tree limb or something right there by it and scared it, or just got a little fragment in it or something. He said his range was short, under 100 yards, no hair, no blood. It does say a couple of weeks later there was a carcass of that four-point buck. How does he know that it was that four-point buck? Was that the only four-point buck in the woods that weekend? So I'm... And they didn't find a bullet in it, so it was just a four-point buck that they found. So that is inconclusive at best. Said even if the deer succumbed to the 223 slug, it made such a little hole that there was no blood or evidence of the hit. He says the 223 with 55 grain nozzle or ballistic tip moving at 3,250 feet per second only scores 6 on the Taylor knockout scale. Okay, we've talked about the Taylor scale numerous times. The Taylor scale does not take into account whatsoever in any degree bullet performance. It is only energy. The 223 is woefully lacking in energy as far as I shouldn't even use the term energy, because if you want to use muzzle energy, it's a whole completely different formula, totally different deal. But let me use the term striking force, just for lack of a better term. So yeah, if you take a ballistic pendulum, a swinging steel plate of, you know, any given weight, something that the bullet will not penetrate, and shoot it and watch it swing, and you have some way of measuring that swing and measuring that movement, you'll find that the 223 is pathetic, woefully lacking in any type of thing, anything that resembles energy or striking force, let's call it that. You shoot the same plate with a 44 Magnum, a 30-30, even a 357 Magnum, 243, I don't care what you use. And, you know, it'll swing around and around. So, but if you look at the performance of the bullet, the expansion of the bullet itself, or lack of, depends the case may be, the 223 has admirable performance given the right type of bullet. You do not want to use 52 grain National Match hollow points for hunting deer. You do not want to use full metal jackets for hunting deer. You use full metal jackets for hunting fur bears so that you don't ruin the pelts. You use hollow points for hunting varmints that you're not worried about the pelts. You would want more of a controlled expansion bullet that may or may not exit the other side, but gives its full penetration, I mean its full expansion, inside the body. So this guy is trying to compare the what it does on the Richter scale, the Taylor knockout scale, to, it says, compare that with a 357 Magnum, 158 grain moving at 1,500 feet per second. You're getting a 12 on the Taylor scale and a 30-30 with its 170 grain bullet scoring 15. And in his words, the 357 handgun and 30-30 are often considered marginal for deer hunting. Dog's going crazy. I'm going to put something on here for you guys to listen to, and I'll be back, because it sounds like the dogs need my attention. So, stand by.
I was walking home from school on a cold winter day. Took a shortcut through the woods, and I lost my way. It was getting late, and I was scared and alone. But then a kind old man took my hand and led me home. Now mama couldn't see him, oh, but he was standing there, and I knew in my heart he was the answer to my prayers. Oh, I believe there are angels among us, sent down to us from somewhere up above. They come to you and me in our darkest hours to show us how to live. teach us how to give, to guide us with the light of love. When life held troubled times and had me down on my knees, there's always been someone to come along and comfort me. A kind word from a stranger, to lend a helping hand, a phone call from a friend, just to say I understand. But ain't it kind of funny, at the dark end of the road, that someone lights the way with just a single ray of hope? Oh, I believe there are angels among us, sent down to us from somewhere up above. They come to you and me in our darkest hours to show us how to live, to teach us how to give, to guide us with the light of love. They wear so many faces, show up in the strangest places to grace us with their mercy in our time of need. Oh, I believe there are angels among us, sent down to us from somewhere up above. They come to you and me in our darkest hours to show us how to live, to teach us how to give, to guide us with the light of love, to guide us with the light of love.
God bless Texas. I've been sent to spread the message. God bless Texas.
I made it back just in time. I've been sitting in my chair about 3.5 seconds. It worked out perfect. About 40 degrees out there right now. It's kind of cool. And decided not to build a fire tonight. Now I'm kind of regretting it. But anyway, there is something out there. I don't know what it is, but they've got all the goats all huddled up in one corner out there. So something's got them excited. We'll keep an eye out here. All right, let me get over here and see what happened in the chat room while I was gone. Yakima Glock, the whitetail that I was talking about, he said Idaho has some nice whitetails. Well, the one that I was talking about a while ago, I killed in Idaho. It was up by St. Mary's, up the St. Joe River, to the east of St. Mary's. And there's a place out there called Slaughterhouse Draw. And right up at the head of Slaughterhouse Draw is where I killed that big old whitetail. He was a dandy for a whitetail. Matter of fact, the horns are hanging right here on the wall, right over here beside me. Hanging about 10 feet from the very first mule deer I ever killed in my whole life. No, the second one, my second mule deer. Second or third. I killed that one when I was 13 years old, so I don't remember if it was second or third, but anyway. Okay, let's get back here to this silly story that this guy's got here. okay. He was talking about the... now, you can tell that this guy is probably just maybe above the millennial in age here. Because he says that the 3030 and 357 are considered marginal for deer hunting. Well, if you kept up with the 357 Magnum at all, in 1935 when it first came out, Colonel Wesson, anyway, I don't think it was Dan, there was another one. But anyway, his son killed a moose with a single shot in the vitals from a, I think it was an 8-inch 357 Magnum, a model 27 or 28, I don't remember. So, marginal for deer, but it's okay for moose. I can't even begin, I have never met a single person in my life, knowledgeable or unknowledgeable, experienced or inexperienced, you know, black, white, brown, young, old, fat, skinny, blonde. I've never met anybody that considered the 30-30 marginal for deer hunting. I have never heard anything in my entire life other than one thing. The 30-30 is the most perfect deer caliber that ever was. And that's a fact. It continues to this day with all these modern calibers still yet to account for more deer every single year, probably than all other calibers combined, but certainly more than any other single caliber. Every year, reloading die is still high for the 30-30. The 30-30 is... it's so efficient. Recoil is reasonable on it. Range is not great, but, you know, 200 yards or so is not at all unreasonable for 30-30. I say that. If you put a scope on a 30-30 and you know your round, you can go quite a bit more than that. But the thing I like about the 30-30 is on mule deer size game, nearly, and Ed, you've heard me say this before, but nearly 100% of the time is when you go to skin that deer, if you'll feel the hide straight across the other side from the bullet, unless you shot him, you know, quartering away or quartering towards you and it's at an angle, about 90% of the time you can go on the other side and you can feel a little lump under the hide on the other side. And that's that 30-30 bullet. And that has been the case in damn near every deer that I've killed with a 30-30. And the only way it could be any more perfect, I don't know that it can be any more perfect, because the only reason that it didn't come out the other side and fall out on the ground is because of the elasticity, the stretch of the skin. It mushroomed, pushed out on that skin, and come back. And the amount of ruined meat, the bloodshot meat around the 30-30 hole is so minimal compared to a 308 or a 243 or a 270 or whatever you want to choose. It is so minimal, way more minimal than a 223. It works perfectly. It is an ideal deer gun within its range limitations. And I'm going to call that 150 yards for the average, you know, with open sights. 200 yards is not at all unreasonable at all. But I'd say 150 is probably more of an average there. The Yakima Glock, I don't doubt that one bit. I absolutely believe that. Yakima Glock says there's, his granddad always said there's more deer taken out of the woods with a 30-30 than any other round. I would say probably than all other rounds. There are a lot of damn 30-30s out there, especially back east in the more dense, you know, heavier woods. Out here in the west, there's still a lot of them out there, but, you know, the flatter shooting, longer range guns are pretty popular too. But there's still, you know, I killed the first several deer with a 30-30, and I was out here in the west when I did it. I was 9 years old when I got my first one. I told you about the one that I lost when I was 8, and never did get over that. But killed my first one, took him home when I was 9 with a 30-30. The one that I'm looking at on the wall over here right now, I got with a 30-30 when I was 13. And there was quite a few others besides that. So anyway, back to the story. He said, so why would you take a caliber like the 223 out for whitetail when it is only one-third of the power of the 30-30? This guy simply doesn't get it. It has nothing to do with power. It has everything to do with shot placement and bullet performance. If this guy had any idea how many deer I've killed with a 22 and 22 Magnum, he'd have a stroke. That makes sense, Yakima Glock. That's out in that part of the country. I don't doubt that a single bit. So he says, even if you crank the bullet weight of the 223 up to 77 grains, you still wind up way short of the 357 Magnum when it comes to knockdown power. See, he's throwing that knockdown power stuff around him. So do yourself and your deer hunting chances a favor and leave the 223 to killing coyotes and woodchucks. We'll just leave that there. It's going to get worse, because now we're talking blasphemy. The next one is the 22 Magnum. He says, I'm betting this guy's never been in the woods before. I bet he does all of his hunting on an Atari game or something. I don't know what he does. But he says, speaking of killing coyotes, for many years I've heard that some bad advice given out about a round that can supposedly take them down, and that is the 22 Magnum. 22 Magnum has been around for a long time. It's been used on all manner of creatures, but why it's been recommended for coyotes is anyone's guess. Stop! Just stop. Just go back to Starbucks and get a latte and take off your NRA cap and get your unbelievable. One has to consider that coyotes can range from only 20 to 30 pounds out west to bordering on 50 to 60 pounds. I've never seen a 50 to 60 pound coyote in my life. and even more in places here in the Northeast. It is not uncommon to see some coyotes where I hunt here locally packing very heavy fur and tipping the scales on the larger end as winter approaches. You know what? I'm going to do something right now. We're going to do this together. And we're going to find out. We're going to find out a little bit about coyotes here. It says here, somebody asked a question here, is a wolf and coyote the same thing? It does say that adult coyote males range from 18 to 44 pounds and females 15 to 40 pounds. Those size varies geographically. Northern species, which average 40 pounds, tend to grow larger than the southern species in Mexico, which tend to go around 25 pounds. So, there you have it. Okay, let's get back to the story here. I have killed coyotes with rounds ranging from the 22 Hornet up to a 16 gauge slug once when I was hunting whitetail, and I found that the 22 Hornet is the lightest round I would recommend on one, certainly here in the East. Coyotes are pretty hardy beasts, and I have seen them soak up a lot of punishment. Even with the best of bullets, for me, the 22 Magnum should be left to some of the smaller fur bearers. It might work well for a close-range headshot, hello trappers, but if hit not quite where you want it to go on a coyote, you'll need a bullet that can finish the job quickly. Shooting an animal multiple times is not something many hunters want to do, especially if you're trying to get good money for the pelt. The Yakima Glock, that's exactly what I'm thinking. It just sounds like his field experience is limited to internet forums. I'll have to say, I don't think. Of course, when I hunt deer with a 22 Magnum, I've killed quite a few deer with a 22 Magnum. I'm extra careful. I don't shoot running deer at 300 yards with a 22 Magnum, expect them to tip over dead. You know, if I can't get a good standing shot, or I'll take them when they're walking or trotting a little bit if they're inside of 100 yards. I know the gun's limits. I know my limits. And I would give anything to have a video of that bear that I killed last May. It's been almost a year now. That bear had turned to the left and was moving. We would be moving to my left, moving north, and he had started to go over the fence, and I pulled the trigger, and he plopped down, turned around, run three steps, and fell. I knew as soon as he ran those three steps, I could see the way he was moving, that he was done for. And he run three steps and tipped over dead, was deader than a hammer. And this bear probably weighed, most of you already know, but live weight, he was probably 120 pounds. Not a big bear by any remote stretch of the imagination. He was a little bear. But nevertheless, it was a... this guy's talking about not being able to kill 30-pound coyotes. And of all the deer that I've killed with a 22 Magnum, most of them never took more than a couple of steps, if they took a step at all. Of course, most of them were shot in the head, too. But there are some whitetails that I've killed with a 22 Magnum that I made hard shots on, and especially with these new newer bullets, newer style bullets that they have in the last 10 years. It hit the ground right where they're at. Yakima Glock's talking about killing maybe 40 pounders there. Yeah. 30-30 or 222. 222 is a good little round, too. It's a shame that it died. It's, for all practical purposes, it's obsolete now. But anyway, I most definitely do not agree with this. The third caliber that he's chosen here is the 410 shotgun. Now, I have this discussion with people about shotguns quite often. That the 410 is, it's less powerful and not as much. That's not entirely true. It's less powerful if you consider the entire payload of the shot, of the whole shot column. If you consider individual BB energy, it's really not that much different. Because if you take a 410 and a 20 gauge and a 16 gauge and a 28 gauge and a 12 gauge and a 10 gauge, until you start looking at magnum loads, even that doesn't change the velocity as much as people think it does. It gives a larger shot column. But not really that much more velocity. Hang on here just a minute. There we go. Okay. If we look at the velocity of a 410. Let me see if I can find something to back up my stuff here. Here we go. Okay, here's, well, that's slugs. Even at slugs, we're talking 1,700 feet a second out of, 1,700 feet out of a 410. Where is, let's see, that's slugs, there's buckshot. Okay, there's number four shot. Number four buckshot. Okay, here we go. On the high side, velocity is right at 1,200 feet a second. So, give or take 50 feet. That's about what your typical 12 gauge is. So back to what I was saying here, the 410 is, in my mind, is an expert's gun, not a beginner's gun. Because not that it has less energy, it has the same amount of energy per pellet, it's just got a whole lot less pellets. You know, it's got less than half the payload that the 12 gauge does, but it's going about the same speed. So you have to be more on target. You know, if you're shooting anything from doves and quail to grouse and partridges and ducks, you've got to be on target. You have a whole lot less BBs to do the job with. But I will agree with this guy that the 410 to me is more of a competition gun. When you're shooting skeet and stuff like that, it requires, you've got to be truly an expert to do very well with clay pigeons other than with 410. 28 gauge is a little bit bigger than the 410, be halfway in between the 410 and the 28, or the 20 gauge. And I did really, really well with my 28 gauge when I was down in Texas, you know, shooting skeet. But I never did shoot much with the 410. But anyhow, let's see. Let me go back here and see what he has to say about the 410. I'm going to say that I, for the most part, I agree with what he's saying with this one. As much as I love hunting whitetail, during the last 15 years, my favorite animal to hunt has been the ruffed grouse. I learned when I began to hunt these little devils that they're tougher than they look. Or you can make a few mistakes if you want to, and you can make few mistakes if you want to put them in your freezer. In the thick cover of brush and backwoods, you'll get only a few seconds to sometimes get a shot off, even when you spot one before it breaks. And it goes from zero to what seems like supersonic. One shotgun, not sometimes, but often recommended for rough grouse, is the little 410. I have yet to understand why. The 410 is a long-term to beginner's gun, but it's actually a great gun for squirrels, rabbits, long after the hunter has built up experience. Okay, he's saying more or less the same thing that I do. So, let's see what he says here in conclusion. He says, when you're hunting, whether it's to put venison in the freezer or a few birds for a nice Sunday dinner or to clean out some of the local varmint population, you're obligated to make the kill as clean and quick as possible. There should be no shortcuts, and you should make sure that you're using enough gun to do the job. Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah. That part I agree with. So we'll let that part of it go. Okay. Well, I get pretty touchy about 22 Magnum pretty fast. Now, I'm going to tell you, and I don't know how many times we've talked about the 22 Magnum, but if you look at the velocity of that thing, it is the, how would you say it? It's kind of like the 30-30 of high-powered rifle, or the 30-30 of rimfires. It's the performance is just superb for its size on all size of game. It is an outstanding varmint gun. If I would really have to seriously consider if someone walked up to me and said, here's your choice of three or four different guns, or any number of guns, let's whatever. And you can choose one of these. You can have a handgun, and you can have a semi-automatic rifle, and you can have a bolt-action rifle. In one of these, you're only going to have one caliber for the rest of your life. And we'll make sure that you have plenty of ammunition. No matter what you choose, you will never run out of ammo. I would be hard-pressed not to choose the 22 Magnum. I have made many good, clean kills on everything from mule deer and everything down. I've never killed an elk with one, but I know people that have. And I know people who've killed elk with a 17 Remington. I don't agree with it, but nevertheless, they've done it. But for all manner and all size of game, hunting, foraging, self-defense, 22 Magnum's just hard to beat. Hard to beat. Okay, rambling time is over. So I will be back here Wednesday night. We still have more gun stuff we need to take care of here. So we'll see you guys Wednesday night. And I appreciate you hanging out with me here. And I'm going to scoot on out of here.
Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me.
No reconciliation. No, let's talk it over. Number I can call. Goodbye, says